Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. Hundreds of characteristics distinguish human beings from other species. What writer Lisa Cron finds most fascinating is our need for stories. Film, television, literature, contemporary music, and video games are all dependent on story. The fact that we crave stories is no accident. It's how we learn and retain critical information. In fact, Lisa Cron has written a book on the topic.
Her premise that we're hardwired for story is backed by neurological science. It's all in the pages of Wired for Story, which, though geared for writers, has life lessons for all of us. Lisa Cron's been a story consultant for Bravo, Miramax, Showtime, Warner Brothers, and several literary agencies. She's currently an instructor in the UCLA Extension Writers Program. She joins us to explain the impact of story in our lives. Welcome to Take Care, Lisa.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Anyone who's taken a class on human evolution knows that opposable thumbs are a big deal. They helped us to develop and use tools, for instance. But you say that story was crucial to our evolution, more so than opposable thumbs. And you've written, opposable thumbs let us hang on. Story told us what to hang on to. So what's the story behind this idea? And what's the supporting science?
Story really was crucial to our evolution. It was more important than opposable thumbs because story is what told us to hold on to. Think of story as the world's first virtual reality because story is what allows us to envision the future and so plan for that thing that we're still the most frightened of, the unexpected, the unknown. Because think about it in your own life. How often is what you expect to have happen what actually happens? And when it does, how often does it feel like what you thought it would? Hardly ever. Stories are simulations, is what scientists think. Stories are simulations. They allow us to experience difficult problems to see what it would be like should we find ourselves in that situation. Like, you know, I see those berries over there and they look delicious and I'm starving. And did I mention it's the Stone Age, so I can't, you know, go home, you know, buy something, take it home and nuke it? But I heard this story about the Neanderthal next door who chowed down on a couple of handfuls and the way they said he was writhing on the ground and foaming at the mouth before he died. I mean, he died. That should be enough. But it sounded really painful, too. So I think I'll forego the berries and make do with a couple of cold beetles and live to see the dawn. In other words, story was so seminal, it was so crucial to our survival, that nature found a way to make it pleasurable so we'd pay attention and not eat the red berries. And the big takeaway here is that that great feeling you get when you're lost in a good story, it's not arbitrary, it's not pleasure for pleasure's sake, it's biological, it's chemical, it's a survival mechanism. What it is, it's dopamine. It's your brain's way of encouraging you to follow your curiosity so you find out how the story ends and don't eat the red berries and survive. And the big takeaway is that we don't turn to stories to escape reality. We turn to story to navigate reality.
Let's go into that point, because one of the big things that you cite in the book is that animals react due to innate reflex, and you had mentioned that neuroscientists call this zombie systems. And human reactions, as you've pointed out, are very much based on feeling. They're in the subconscious brain, and that's what scientists refer to as the adaptive or cognitive unconscious. So, so you're saying that story is part of that adaptive unconscious. And so that we're taking in information in a very different way than animals do, and that we're protagonists in our own story.
Exactly. I mean, it's interesting. The stories that we tell mirror the way that we see the world, because we think in story. We think in narrative. In other words, you are the protagonist, as you said, in your life, and you evaluate everything based on how it's going to affect you. Is this going to help me? Is this going to hurt me? And it doesn't make you self-centered. It makes you human, because that's the only way you can really evaluate what to do and what not to do, so that while you're evaluating everything based on how it's going to affect you, it's not just, will this make me richer? Will this, you know, save my life? It's also, will this make me feel like my most authentic self? If I do this, am I going to feel good about myself? How will other people feel about me? And the way the cognitive subconscious works is, here's a really interesting fact. Do you have any idea how many pieces of information hit your five senses every second? And the answer is 11 million. If you had to pay attention to all of those, we couldn't get up in the morning, let alone go to bed at night. We wouldn't be able to do anything. So what happens is your cognitive subconscious rips through all of that at warp speed, and it gives you the information that you need in order to survive in that moment. So most of that completely goes by the wayside. And they say that we can hold in our heads kind of tangentially about 40 pieces of information at one time and focus in on about, they say it's like 7 plus or minus, or 5 plus or minus 2, which I've heard that number's even been is lower than that. And those pieces of information that are put into our head that we pay attention to are the pieces of information that our conscious brain needs to take a look at, because the zombie systems aren't telling us what to do. You know, it's like when you're driving in a car, if you had to look and go, gee, those cars in front of me don't seem to be going fast. Wait, that car has its red lights on. That means it's stopping. I better put my foot on the brake. You'd already be in their back seat. You know, you would have slammed into them, but your zombie system, your foot slams onto the brake. The information that comes into that tiny part of your brain that is the thinking part is the part of the brain that needs to make decisions when the zombie systems can't tell us what to do, when it's a tiebreaker, when we're not sure what's really going on. And story is how we make sense of that. Well, how would that affect me? Well, what's really happening? Well, what should I do? And it's just as true in the physical world as it is in the social world.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And our guest today is Lisa Cron. And we're talking about how our brains are hardwired for story, really for our own survival. Now, Lisa, you cite a study from Creative Research Journal that indicates a powerful story can have a hand in rewriting the reader's brain and help instill empathy. And that really interests me. How does that work?
Well, it's really interesting what story does, because when that dopamine surge comes, there's that expression, you know, it's a willful suspension of disbelief, and there's nothing really willful about it. When you get lost in a story, you are actually, when I say virtual reality, it's true, you are actually there. They've done fMRI studies that show that when you're lost in a good story, the same areas of your brain light up that would light up if you are doing what that main character is doing. So you are literally really going through that same experience. And very often, I mean, in life, when we look at someone who's, say, different from us, and we go, well, look at that idiot, man. I would never, if I was in that situation, I would never do that. But when we are in that situation, because we're reading it now, we're feeling what that character would feel like and what it would really be like. Because remember what we said earlier, it's like things rarely feel like what we think they're going to feel like. When you're actually in their skin, you're feeling, you're going, oh, that's very different. That is not at all what I expected. That person might even be more like me. And so literally you're more rewired to put yourself in their shoes, to feel what they're feeling, and to feel how that affects you as a person, A, if you were them, and then in terms of, I think, also feeling like a good person, which is taking their feelings into account. But you can't do that by thinking about it. You do that by feeling it, because every decision we make is based on how we feel about something, which is a real game changer from what most of us were taught.
I was interested in the fact that you point out that people would much prefer to read fiction than nonfiction, and yet, you know, obviously we're going to get facts from nonfiction, but you're saying that we get this empathy, we get this feeling of relating to the protagonist, and that you actually have mentioned that it can be life-changing. And one of the things that you cite is a novel that really was critical for the success of civil rights in the 1960s. What novel was that?
Absolutely. It was To Kill a Mockingbird, and it is widely cited as changing the way the nation viewed the inhuman injustice of racism simply by giving them a glimpse of it through the eyes of a six-year-old white girl, Scout. In 1991, the Library of Congress Center for the Book found that To Kill a Mockingbird came in second only behind the Bible as books most often cited as making a difference. Oprah Winfrey called it our national novel, and you know, First Lady Laura Bush said it changed how people think. And it does, because we feel first and think second. We don't take information in terms of thinking about it in the abstract, because we can't wrap our brains around the abstract. I mean, think about it in your life. Have you ever done anything in general or in the abstract? Of course not. You do things very specifically. And story or narrative takes those big ideas, abstract concepts, you know, dry facts, and translates them into something very specific that we can experience and so feel. And that's what tells us how we feel about it, what it means to us, and that's what moves us to action. That's why the scary thing is the people who really know this, way more than writers, are, you know, advertisers, politicians, televangelists. They really know that the way to pull someone in is to tell them a story, because your analytic brain goes to sleep. It says, you get that rush of dopamine, and it says to your analytic brain, shut up, shut up, shut up. Don't poke holes. Don't think. This is going to feel good. I want to get lost in the story. Stories feel good for the same reason food tastes good. So we'll pay attention to them because we need to survive.
I wonder if we're all similarly wired by degree. I'm guessing our brain is wired in a certain way, but some people seem more open to certain experiences or taking in new information and changing it. Other people seem to be stuck in their view and their perception. And sometimes they might be a little reluctant to accept the reality of new information. They just want to stick with their internal script. Do you think within this science there are degrees that we all experience, some people more so than others?
I think it's a great question. And I think that the answer is that with the right story, people can change those deep core views, but it needs to be spoken in their language. And I think that's what advertisers, and that's what really good when people are trying to do social messaging, if they message it in a way, in a story that is going to really respect that person's core values, but perhaps change them a little bit. I think that it can really pretty much change anyone. It's just that when you're writing a story that's meant to change someone's point of view as opposed to you know, a novel or a movie or a television show, if you don't speak in their language, they're just not going to pay any attention at all. But if you do speak in their language, you very well might change it. I can give you a great example. There was a study done out of Ohio State a couple of years ago, and in part it was to see what would have a greater effect on it was college-age women. Women's use of birth control. Would it be a news-style documentary that talked about the horrors of teen pregnancy, or would it be an episode of a popular television show? And so, you know, one group of women watched this. It was really well done. It had lots of really scary facts and scary statistics and teen, you know, moms and dads talking about how their lives had just been upended. And the other group watched an episode of the nighttime TV soap opera The OC, in which two of the main characters, Ryan and Teresa, were actually negotiating and going through, you know, the heart-wrenching consequences of an unintended pregnancy. And as you can imagine, the women who watched the news show, their behavior didn't change at all because they felt like someone was telling them what to do and calling them, you know, you're doing something wrong and you need to change. And they were like, well, no, I am who I am and I'm never going to do what those idiots did. That might happen to them. It's not going to happen to me. And that analytic brain came up and its goal is to just to argue with everything that comes at you. When they got lost in a story that spoke their language, that was about people just like them, and they just felt that one moment, what would it be like to wake up and feel that shift? And when they felt it in virtual reality, the last thing they wanted to do was feel it in real reality, and their behavior changed. The irony of that is that the whole, you know, reason for being of the documentary was to change behavior. And, you know, what did the TV show want to do? You know, get high ratings, sell soap or whatever, you know, whatever the advertisers were selling. But because it spoke in the language of the people who were watching, of its audience, it had a very profound effect. And that's what stories do. So I think that, yes, some stories are going to move certain people more than others, depending on if it speaks their language and if it respects what they already believe, because that certainly can throw you out of a story when someone's saying something that goes so against what you think is true or what you think could happen. And then that wakes up the analytic brain and you go, oh, no, wait a minute. That I just don't believe a person would do that. Bad novels do that, you know, when you're reading something going, wait a minute. You know, she would completely never take him back after he did that. And then you stop reading.
Lisa, this is a story that could go on forever, but unfortunately we're going to have to stamp the end at this point. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure.
Lisa Cron is a story consultant in the film and television industry and the author of Wired for Story. For more information on Lisa Cron and her book, visit the Take Care webpage at WRVO.org.
Coming up on next week's show, got pain and stiffness in the hands, hips, or knees? It could be osteoarthritis. A Harvard Medical School professor who's one of the country's leading authorities on arthritis care and treatment shares his advice. Plus, those jars of dried herbs in your pantry may be just what you need to spice up your healthy lifestyle. Discover the healing power of spices with an editor at Prevention Magazine.
Thanks for spending this half hour with us. If you have any questions or comments about today's show, email us at takecare@wrvo.org. This episode of Take Care is also available as a podcast on iTunes and the WRVO website. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And until next time, take care.
The information presented on Take Care is offered for educational and informational purposes only and should not be construed as personal medical advice. You should consult with your personal physician or caregiver regarding your own medical care. Take Care is a production of WRVO Public Media, written and produced by Lorraine Rapp and Linda Lowen, edited and engineered by Leah Landry. Catherine Loper is executive producer. Support for Take Care comes from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York.